everybody. Welcome to episode 382 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
This is Nick.
And I'm Manny.
That's right. We got all three of you here for your listening pleasure. Coming to you to talk about Justice League number 2 from writer Scott Snyder. Art by Jorge Jimenez and colors by Alejandro Sanchez. So, again, we're not sure how long we're going to be doing these Justice League spotlights. Basically, for as long as the Justice League title seems to be of critical importance to the DC universe. So, I kind of thought we'd be doing them for a long time. But I don't know how you guys feel, but I felt like the magnitude and the importance, that tone and that overall feeling that permeated issue one, it seemed to be a little lacking in this issue. I didn't have the same kind of feeling like I'm reading the most important series since Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, they kind of shrunk it down pretty quick to like a small proximity. And I thought it was going to be like a like a hit the world and rebuild it or something. And it's more like, oh, now there's an object on Earth that's affecting shit.
Yeah, and maybe it'll ramp back up. I mean, this issue in a way did seem more focused on like Luthor. And kind of the recruitment of more people for the team, specifically Jon Stewart. So, yeah, I'm not really sure. But you didn't get a chance to join us for the first go-round of Justice League Spotlight, Manny. We talked about issue one. So what were your thoughts on issue one?
I think I talked a little bit about it. I don't remember what we were covering. But I got that feel of the team book. Kind of the same way that I feel about the recent Avengers book on Brand Marvel. It feels like a Justice League, like a big deal. But I have to agree with you guys on the second issue. It kind of like they turned it down quite a bit from the first one. And I get it. You have to set things up. You have to reintroduce Lex Luthor. And I mean, you're introducing a different lantern color. I mean, there's so many characters. There's a lot going on. There's a lot you got to set up. So I am going to give it a little bit of leeway, a little bit. So, I didn't get that same aura of a Justice League Legion book as I did in the first issue.
Yeah, and it was very strange to have it go from feeling so important and so connected and so much of a must-read to have it. And not to say this isn't an entertaining comic, but again, it just didn't have the grandeur of that first issue. So I think Snyder captured that so well in the first issue. So to have this one be kind of, I don't want to say it was disappointing, but it was surprising that it, that level of grandeur was turned down.
Or even like reading Man of Steel at the same time. It's like, obviously these two books have no effect whatsoever on each other.
Yeah.
Man of Steel, that's another.
Yeah, Manny doesn't like Man of Steel. He's a hater.
Especially 5. I was like, that's not this podcast.
All right. You know, we'll be seeing Brian Michael Bendis in a few weeks, so
a lot.
we'll definitely have to sit down with him at San Diego and chat.
You're not gonna do what you did with me with John Romita Jr., right? There he is, Manny. Go tell him how bad his heart is.
I would never do such a thing. You know, I threatened to do the same thing to Nick at Denver when he was complaining about he didn't like, was it 48?
Batman 48, yeah.
Oh, 48, yeah. So, yeah, we went up to Tom King. I'm like, yeah, so this guy right here says you suck.
No, you didn't. If you had done that, I would have died.
Yeah, whatever. I would never. Well, I wouldn't say I would never. It probably depends on how many drinks I've had.
Thankfully, the second time you talked to Tom King, when you had more drinks, I wasn't there. Otherwise, you would have sold me out.
I very well may have. And then the next day, when Tom came up to me before the panel, I hadn't had anything. It was, early in the morning. So I didn't sell you out then either. I would think that I wouldn't really do that. So, and I don't, and I don't think that JRJR heard me, Manny. In fairness,
I know, but that guy's such a like. It makes me feel bad now because now that I've talked to him, at quite a few shows, it's kind of like, damn, dude, you're such a nice guy. Like, Why are all your characters so black?
Hey, that's one of Nick's favorite artists, you know.
Was that- I mean, his like from his stuff, like Superman on, like the stuff he's does at DC. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I like Batman All-Star Batman.
I will say that his later stuff, the stuff he's been doing most recently on the Silencer series, I think is an improvement over Superman, and I think All-Star Batman was an improvement over his Superman work. So, I don't know. Sometimes his stuff looks better than others, but if you want good Romita Jr. art, just go back and look at his Iron Man stuff from the early 80s. He does know how to draw. It is true. So, anyway, on to the matter at hand, Justice League 2, number 2. The last thing I'll say before I get into the synopsis here is that there's every chance that Snyder is going to have a different tone in the book based on who the artist is. So maybe when the Jim Chung issues come out, that's where he's going to make it more cosmic and more grand. And when it's the Jorge Jimenez issues, he's going to, you know, basically play to each artist's, you know, particular strength. So when it's the Jorge Jimenez issues, those may be the more character-driven issues where we get a little more into individual characters rather than advancing the story as much and having it, you know, feel like it's got that big grand scope. So
isn't that why he did All-Star Batman for a bit? Was that he wanted to take off writing a 2-book-a-week series?
Yeah, I mean, well, he felt like he was kind of done with Batman for the time. He wanted to put him away. He wanted to be able to tell stories that were kind of outside continuity, which is kind of what All-Star Batman is.
It's true.
But yeah, he did mention that also the schedule. So yeah, it is a little I'd forgotten about that, actually. I'm glad you brought that up. So it is interesting that he's doing a book that now comes out every other week. I wonder how long it'll last. What's that, Manny?
I love this cover though.
Yeah, it is a really great cover. The other thing to think about with this is, so he was on Batman for like 52 issues, right? And yes, he had other stories he could tell with Batman, and he has said himself numerous times he could have kept writing Batman and kept cashing the check, but in a way he felt like he'd done what he wanted to do with the character, and it would have been he wasn't feeling challenged by it anymore, and so he didn't feel like it was fair for him to really sit there and kind of phone it in. You know, somebody like Scott Snyder, somebody like Charles Soule, they're always trying to push themselves. So that's another part of it. And so we take it from that context and look at, okay, he is on a book that comes out twice a month. But, you know, he has said in numerous interviews that Justice League is the book that he feels like he's been building up to at DC for a long time. So he's probably got a lot of ideas. He may stay on this book for 2 years. 2 years of Justice League twice a month is 25 issues, right? That's still only half the amount of story that he produced for Batman. So it may not be schedule necessarily for why he decided to go ahead and take on a book that comes out twice a month as much as it is, I still have a lot of Justice League stories to tell. I still have a lot of material in my head, so I can, you know, work on a book that comes out twice a month because there's plenty of story left. Whereas, you know, he may have felt that, yeah, I don't really have any Batman stories that I feel compelled to tell, especially if it's going to be a book that's coming out twice a month, and then I'm going to need a lot of story. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and honestly, it's kind of a promotion, isn't in a way. Like, Batman might be a better-selling book, but, like, Justice League is, like, the gold standard, just like Avengers. It's like, what's better than writing Iron Man? Oh, writing the Avengers as far as movies. So it's like you get more power over the entire universe and bigger stories.
Yeah, exactly. And Manny will agree with me on this. So when the New 52 came out, Jeff Johns was writing Justice League, Jim Lee was on art. It was a flagship title. And Johns stayed on it. That was the one book that he stayed on, even as he got busier doing movie and TV stuff. You know, he stopped doing Green Lantern. Because he was doing three. He was doing Green Lantern, he was doing Aquaman, and he was doing Justice League. And then as time went on, he stopped doing Aquaman first. And then he stopped doing Green Lantern, and he only was on Justice League. That's the one book he stayed on throughout the entirety of the New 52. And at that point, like all throughout John's run, the Justice League felt like that book was very connected to the rest of the Marvel or the rest of the DC universe. It kind of steered the ship, so to speak. And then when Rebirth happened, you had Justice League from Brian Hitch, and Tony Daniel was on it a little bit, and it kind of meandered, and it just didn't feel like it really mattered. And even before that, with DCU, the DCYOU initiative that they did, when they had the Justice League of America title from Brian Hitch, they got later and later and later, and it was supposed to be so great or whatever, and it just never really clicked. And then they kept Brian Hitch on Justice League when Rebirth started. Tony Daniel was on it for a while. Then eventually Christopher Priest came on. By that time, I think everybody had dropped it because it was just inconsistent. It just wasn't very good. And then I heard that when Priest came on, it got a lot better. But even Snyder in interviews, he has said, you know, I'm not trying to diss anybody. I think what they've been doing, Brian Hitch and the other guys, it's been great stuff. But the book hasn't felt so connected to the DC universe as it has in the past. And for him, that's where it needs to be. The Hall of Justice does need to be a central place in the DC universe where you're walking through the Hall of Justice and, hey, there's Plastic Man. Hey, there's a Green Lantern. There's Blue Beetle. You know, there's one of the Teen Titans. It really should be like a gathering place for all the heroes. So I think that's what Snyder's trying to do. At least that's what he's been vocalizing in interviews.
No, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I mean, what John's did with Aquaman was fantastic. You put him right back on the map, and then all the way to the end of New 52 during Darkseid War, it was so good. And then for it to just really stall with Rebirth, it really, really was disappointing. And Priest is gonna improve almost any title with his style of writing. I think that's the reason why Justice League One was so important to me. It felt a lot more important. It felt like this is going to be the central of the DC universe now. This is where everybody's going to come together. This is where Odyssey is going to come out of. This is where Dark is going to come out. It's like this is like a little bit more focused, and it's going to be a lot more important. Not to say that, you know, Hitch's story is so bad. It's just maybe not the time and the place. His stories are probably better in a side Justice League of America title, or kind of like when Colin Bunn's Aquaman wasn't well received. It was maybe just not the right time or the place for it. Not that his stories were bad. It's just you're coming after a certain writer, and it just doesn't click. But yeah, Justice League needs to be the most important title. And kind of piggybacking off what Nick said, yeah, Batman is the best selling book. I mean, we've looked at Diamond numbers before. It's Batman, 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 Batman. Before you get to any other title, there's going to be Batman characters. There's going to be Batman spinoffs, Harley Quinn. Everything is from a Batman universe before you actually get to another DC title in the top 100 of Diamond sales for the year. But I mean, once you've been there, done that, your next challenge is to make Justice League as relevant as possible. And I commend Snyder for doing so.
Yeah, he definitely did in the first issue. The second issue, again, I'm not sure. I'm reserving judgment because I want to see if he really is going to follow that pattern that I mentioned earlier, where the Jim Chung issues are grand in scope, and the Jorge Jimenez issues are a little more character focused. So let's get into the synopsis. This one starts with Lex Luthor. He's actually in a small town hall in Kansas. He says, "I'm in true awe. I've been to a lot of places around the universe, but this might be his favorite. In fact, the one he's been waiting for his whole life. He's in an American Legion hall, and the Legionnaires are like, are you sure you got the right address? He's like, oh yeah, Kansas West Legionnaires Club, chapter 3675. You see, My father, Lionel, this club was his favorite pastime, besides drinking, I mean. And as a child, I always yearned to come here to find out what was going on. What was he doing that he was passing us up for? So when the invitation to the reunion was rerouted to me, given that he's been long dead, I took it upon myself to come and honor him by buying the building, a totally Lex Luthor thing to do. And they're like, buying the building? And Luther continues, and loading it with explosives. You got about 30 seconds because my suit, it's bomb-proof. And the guys are like, you can't be serious. Luther hits a little button, hidden button on his collar that pops up his helmet that's bomb-proof. And the guys basically can't get out of the building fast enough. They're basically tripping over each other. And as they're leaving, Luther says, well, wouldn't it be faster if you took that door to your left? And they're like, the place only has one door. And Luther's like, what are you talking about? There's a door right here. It's glowing. And he's like, symbol? What's that symbol? And we see that it's actually the symbol on the doorknob that Luther had in the first issue, kind of that upside down Hall of Justice looking symbol. So the place does indeed blow up. That's where Luther got the doorknob that he used to beat Vandal Savage to death. And supposedly he finds something hidden in the basement of that Legionnaires Club, the Legion Hall. And that's per several interviews Scott Snyder has given. I don't know when we'll find out exactly when that is. Then the scene shifts to deep space. We see Green Lantern John Stewart. He's on a lonely mission. He's been tracking a cosmic membrane. And the prisoner that he has says, when your friends broke the source wall, they unleashed some ancient dark forces. And that's what's causing a lot of the problems with the cosmic membrane. So the prisoner that he captured named Greelock is like, you know, don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about with your little flower. He's got a blue Mobius flower from Zanshi, and it's supposed to take away bad thoughts. And he's kind of goading Stewart. He's like, what thoughts are you trying to keep out there, Johnny? And meanwhile, John Stewart's in communication with the Guardians. He's like, let me get this package and send it your way. They're like, the cell's getting ready. Meanwhile, Greelock continues to taunt Stewart. So he basically knocks him out. And then Swamp Thing appears. And that's probably the last person that John Stewart was expecting to show up. He's like, Swamp Thing, what are you? And then Batman reforms. So basically, Swamp Thing shows up. He's somehow communicating and allowing Batman to talk through him. So I don't know if it has to do with that plant. I'm thinking that it does. So Swamp Thing basically manifests through that blue flower and then reforms himself to look like Batman as Batman is speaking through. Through Swamp Thing, and Batman's like, I'm here on behalf of Martian Manhunter, you know, who's currently the chairman of the Justice League. He's like, we need you to help us. We want you to join the Justice League. And Stewart's like, hold on, you know, I have a job. And Batman fills him in on the totality. And he's like, we really need your help because the multiverse is dying. And Stewart's like, well, why do you need my help? Why don't you ask Hal? And Batman's like, well, Hal's busy dealing with the Source Wall. And even if you weren't, you're the one that's led the Green Lantern Corps for years. And if anybody knows what we're up against, it's you. And Stewart's like, well, you only want me on the team because you think I know something. And Batman's saying, no, I know you know something. That's why we want you on the team. But Stewart's like, nah, I got a job to do out here. And Batman's response is, we're running out of time. The Justice League Dark has hidden the totality from the public behind a mystic veil. But if word gets out, and the other day, Killer Croc went into the energy shell and he came out moments ago near Bell Rev prison, completely changed. He's been transformed. And then all of a sudden there's a squealing noise. And Stewart's like, where are you calling me from? What's the background noise? And Batman says, that would be Waylon. And we see a picture of Killer Croc. He looks like a cross between.
That's why I asked about Justice League Dark. I was like, is it already out? They're already referencing it.
No. Yeah, they're referencing it, but it's not out yet. But meanwhile, Killer Croc looks like a cross between a T-Rex and a giant Killer Croc guy. I don't know. He looks pretty savage. He's even got oxidized kryptonite that he like gas that he exhales through his nostrils to try to take out Superman. So Stewart's like, I got my job to do out here. Sorry. And Batman's like, you know, the league and the whole universe, multiverse needs an architect. John, we need you to use your knowledge to build things to reach beyond what seems possible. As the Justice League on Earth continues to try to subdue Killer Croc. And John's like, you know, when I was there on Zanshi, when I screwed up, I, you know, if John forgave me, why are you the one calling? And Batman's response is, well, he's got his hands full. He's turned himself into a giant gorilla to try to take out Killer Croc. So Batman comes back. Martian Manhunter asks, how'd it go? He's like, I can't tell yet. My hope is that he's thinking about it. So meanwhile, the scene shifts to the Legion of Doom headquarters, which is...
meanwhile, in the Legion of Doom.
That's right. They're under the sea. We've got Gorilla Grodd. We've got Black Manta. We've got Cheetah. We've got Lex Luthor. And Cheetah's saying, I love Relics as the next girl, but if we're supposed to be going after the totality, a Legion of Doom should be as ambitious as the gods, if not more so. So basically, like, what are we doing here, Luthor? And Luthor's like, agreed, Cheetah. But the original form of the word doom simply meant fate. 3 months ago, I opened a door that revealed to me my own fate, not just mine, but the fate of everyone and everything. And again, that's that door that he opened in the Legion Hall in the middle of Kansas. And why it was there, I don't know. Guess we'll find out. And meanwhile, Gorilla Grodd's like, I didn't join this group for mumbo jumbo. I joined because I want revenge on the Flash. He's like, don't worry, you'll get it. The totality is the key to everything, but first we need to unlock the seven hidden forces of the universe, forces that made the source wall nearly impossible to access. And that's what the totality's code is telling us, because currently the totality is transmitting a code. It's like each force is something one of you has been looking for your whole life, whether you know it or not. The first one I unlocked, that one will destroy your enemy, Grodd. I couldn't have done it without the help of a true evil genius who's right over here. Say hello to your new partner, Grodd, and don't be afraid. And it's a little baby, so... we'll come back to that. Grodd's like, what the hell is this? And then the second force, Sinestro's already on his way to claim. It's a section of the emotional spectrum that's been off limits until now. Behind that wall, they think we're tiny, insignificant fireflies, but we're not. And the truth is, the stars are the fireflies, and we're the ones building the jar. So the wall was there to protect them from us rather than the other way around. Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
that's my favorite part of the book.
Yeah.
When it literally says that, I was like, I read it say at work, and I read it aloud to another DC fan. I was like, meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice. And yeah,
I should have set up my Hall of Justice sound effect is what I should have done. I'll have to try to track it down. So meanwhile, Flash is building a car that can drive into the Speed Force.
Because he needs it.
Right. Because the Flash just says there's something that's wrong with the Speed Force. It's a speed bump, he says. And his guess is it's his old villain, the Turtle, emphasis on old. He believes there's an opposing energy to the Speed Force, the Still Force, he calls it. And he's always trying to access it, causing vibrational disruptions. And it's really the last thing the Flash needs right now. I mean, can you imagine with everything else that's going on in the world, the last thing the Flash needs is to not be fast anymore. The Flash basically built a car that can access the Speed Force so the Titans could go over and handle that while, you know, Flash, it focuses on the larger issues in the DC universe, such as the totality. So then Martian Manhunter shows up. He says, in fact, I believe we need to go into the totality's energy field today. We can't risk waiting any longer. And hide it as we might, it's likely that word will spread that the totality is there. And Flash is like, good, let's go. I've got 1,000 tests to run, but I'm ready. And Martian Manhunter's like, Barry, you're not going in. John, you can't be serious. I spent my life exploring the multiverse's secrets. Sources of everything land here. Giving off the code, the fate of the universe hangs in the balance. You're sidelining me. And Superman's like, we can't risk you, Barry. If your powers go while you're in there, we need you right here. John's right. So they've decided that if Barry won't go, Clark and John, because they are the two most likely to be able to resist the pathogenic mutagens long enough to reach the totality itself. And now Ray Palmer and Batman have created a size transmutable protective vehicle that will, and Flash is like, wait, Bruce, where are you? He says, without missing a beat, I'm inside Clark's body.
Second best reveal of the comic.
To which Superman says, to file under phrases never to be spoken again. And we meanwhile,
again, I bragged about the scene to my coworker today. I was like, check this out. This is why comics are the best.
Such a Batman thing to do.
Yeah.
Right.
And Superman says, Bruce has some other pod for someone to protect John from inside his body. And then Martian Manhunter drops a little bombshell of his own. He says, Kendra, I'd like you to pilot it. You know weapons of war, and this will be a war of endurance. And Kendra's like, what? Me? You want me to be injected into your body? I'm just figuring myself out. My wings used to be feathers. Now they're metal and come out my back. I'm just learning my powers. And all of a sudden, Barry's like, yeah, why don't you take this one? He no longer wants to be the one that goes inside anybody's body or inside the totality. So John says, if we learned anything in our battle with the Dark Multiverse and the Omega Titans, it's that each of us must accept that we know what we know is but a fraction of what there is to learn, and there's a lot of challenges ahead. So whatever is in the totality, whatever its code, whatever its truth, we've got to pursue it without ego or hesitation. Meanwhile, as John Stewart is heading to MOGO, he's asking the Guardians, come in. It looks like the Steel Force has already been unlocked, and now the damn cosmic membrane is falling apart. I can see what's on the other side, and it's Sinestro. He says, I'm right here, Stuart. You've made me wear green and yellow, but now I'm back in the colors I sought from the start. Allow me to reintroduce myself. I'm Sinestro, the Lantern who just unlocked the invisible emotional spectrum. And you can be my first recruit. So it's interesting, this invisible emotion spectrum. We heard that John may be joining a, what's it called, the Violet Lanterns, I think. So that might be what this is. I mean, ultraviolet lantern. That's right. So this might, I mean, that is invisible, you know, to human eyes. So I could see that as being the emotional spectrum that he's talking about. What I find interesting is the fact that when you look at Sinestro, I mean, this is his classic purplish costume, right? So it is interesting to see him wearing that old school one as opposed to his newer one. Meanwhile, we see Martian Manhunter and Superman in the distance. There are a lot of military vehicles, so they're getting ready to walk into the totality. And can you just totally see them walking toward you with that kind of slow motion a la Armageddon, you know, when all they have their suits on and they're just walking toward the camera?
So, but I don't want to miss a thing.
Oh, my God.
That's what I thought of, too. Yeah.
No, it's meanwhile, supposed to be because I'm leaving on a jet plane. All right,
that's enough singing. So Flash, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman are monitoring as Batman and Hawk Girl pilot the ships inside of our respective heroes. And we get our first look at the totality, and it looks like a giant head. Somewhat of an alien-looking head, because the nose looks a little different. But yeah, it's definitely a giant head. Whose head it is, we don't really know. But as they enter it, there's a giant boom. And we see that John Lantern has indeed landed on Earth. He says, your darkest self shall be our knight. Wield the sword of unseen light. And he's got some weird tattoos on his face. And he's definitely in a different costume. Apparently, he has become an ultraviolet lantern, and he tells Flash, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman, I am John Stewart, head of the Ultraviolet Corps, and now you will all die. They could feel it coming off of him, a blazing energy. Hatred? Of them? Of himself? Of what? Lex Luthor says, the truth, my friends, we will lead the world toward it. Cheetah has her doubts. I don't know, Lex. I have a pretty good nose for when someone's lying. And well, and she gives him a big swipe across the face. And it literally slices his face off. And Manta says, well, Alexbot, team, eh? Luther? Truth first. And he says, always. And Cheetah answers, so if you aren't here, then where the hell are you? And Luther's response is, believe me when I say I've been to many places around the world, hell, around the universe, but of all those places, this place where I am right now just might be my favorite. He's deep within Superman's seraphic vein.
Dun, dun, dun.
And all of a sudden, the Superman says, I can't see anything, John. John says, keep going. For the first time since Kansas, maybe for the first time in his life, Luther is telling the truth. Not about his location, but about everything. His enemies, they're full of lies. They're lying to each other and themselves and to the world about what they really were. They had no compass. They fumbled forward as he once had, flickering in the dark. But Luther feels that he's now a shining warrior for faith, for truth was fate and fate was doom, and that's all there was. So Snyder's going back to that whole doom and fate being the same word in an ancient language. So next we'll see the attack of the Ultraviolet Core and find out more exactly about what Luther is up to. So definitely an action-packed issue. And I kind of enjoyed it more going through and recapping everything than I did the first time I read it. Because it does seem it's an interesting choice, right, to go from Geoff Johns telling the Forever Evil story, which was really the story of Luther becoming aware of what he needed to do to really be a hero. And from there, trying to be a hero, and that's what he's been doing for like the last 5 years of in the DC universe. And now all of a sudden, you know, I think it was probably Action Comics 1000 where he saw Luther flip back to the other way. And now he still sees himself as the hero of his own story, but clearly he's a villain here. And I gotta say, if I have a choice between having a story with the Joker pulling all the strings, which we've had far too much of lately, in my opinion, or Luther, I'm gonna pick Luther every time. And that leads me to my next point, which is we know Joker's a member of the Legion of Doom, but he's the one member that we didn't see show up in this issue. So it makes you kind of wonder. I wonder where he's at right now.
So he's just a dog chasing cars and they let him off the leash.
What were your thoughts on the issue overall, Nick?
Like I said, didn't like as much as the first one. I didn't like that it shrunk what was a giant mystery into like a tiny little spot that Martian Manhunter and Superman had to enter in the desert. When last time it was full of such promise and like, oh, the universe is going to be reshaped. And then like now it's like, oh, well, they're going inside. And then I'm not a huge fan of the twist that Batman's inside his DNA. And then later, I mean, his bloodstream. And then like Luther's inside it later. So I don't know. Kind of, it's a disappointment after the first one, but it's an enjoyable comic book. So
what about you, Manny? What are your thoughts overall?
It's a little letdown overall, but it had good character moments, like with Batman and Luther kind of doing typical Batman Luther things, like something I'd want to see early on. And kind of like what we talked about Man of Steel, where we want to kind of see the, you know, the typical stuff we've already seen just to kind of get us acclimated and go ahead and do all the crazy stuff later. Same thing. It's like a typical Cheetah move to just slash at Luther when she feels something's fishy, and the Flash up to, you know, almost mischievous, you would say. And then John Stewart being that John Stewart kind of really hard-headed guy. So as much as it slowed down, it did have a lot of good character moments, I felt, and that made it kind of enjoyable, at least, and it gave me hope for the next issue, although I'm not sure how I feel about this new color.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, yeah, I found it. So anyway, I kind of agree with both of you in a way. It did slow down, and it is plugging more of, okay, what's Luther up to? I mean, we didn't get any of that last issue. That was all a mystery. He just kind of showed up, kicked Vandal Savage's ass, and everything was focused on this you know, this object that was heading toward Earth, and a lot of it took place in space, and it was kind of, you know, very ephemeral, and it felt, you know, kind of cosmic and big forces moving. And now all of a sudden, okay, it's here on Earth. It's a little more tactile. It's a little more real. And they're kind of dealing – like there's no decision to be made anymore, right? Like that's part of what made the first issue feel so big, right? They knew this huge totality was heading toward Earth. They had 3 minutes to make a decision. So you kind of felt that immediacy and that urgency to decide. And you know, ultimately – Martian Manhunter wasn't able to decide in time, and by the time he did decide, it was too late. So now it's happened and it's here, but for as much as there are character moments in the book, like Manny said, this issue doesn't move the story forward as much as issue one kind of did. We got a bigger chunk of the story because it was, you know, Snyder had to set up everything, right? This one, it's like we're getting a smaller chunk of the story, and in place of more story, we're getting those cool character moments like Manny mentioned. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the whole Dennis Quaid, inner space, Martin Short kind of thing with the shrunken down. Or what's the Disney, the famous Disney movie that like broke ground with like close-up shots of
inside? Journey into...
Yeah, there used to be a ride.
There's a ride. The ride is still there at Disney World.
It's not at Disneyland anymore. It might still be at Disney
World. No, but it's still at Disney World. Isn't last incredible, I haven't been to Disney World 15 years, but
is that what it's called? Incredible Journey?
It sounds close enough.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah.
Fantastic Journey. No, Fantastic Voyage.
Fantastic Voyage. There we go. We should have remembered from the Coolio song, right? Fantastic Voyage. slide, slippity slide. Yeah, how could we forget that? I don't have a sound bite of that, sorry. Instead, I'll just do this again. Yeah, that sound never gets old. So anyway, yeah, I tend to agree. I don't know how I feel about the whole, okay, they've got guys shrunken down. And it was one thing to do it with Batman and Hawkgirl, you know? Maybe it could be cool. They could do certain things. But yeah, now all of a sudden Luthor's inside Superman too. How did he get inside Superman? Wouldn't Superman know?
It feels like an old classic episode of what did they used to call it when they had the Hall of Justice back in the 60s? The animated show? Yeah, it's like an old episode of Superman where it's like, aha, now I'm also inside Superman. That's what it feels like, Nick, to me.
I am not that. 60s? 60s? Man, it was late 70s and 80s. Was it the
60s? Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm too young for that.
God, I'm sorry. I grew up with Batman, the animated series, Superman, The Adventures of Superman. Sorry. Yeah,
you young.
Darn right.
Honestly, if it wasn't for the Super Friends cartoons, I may never have gotten interested in comics in the first place.
See the other mediums work into getting you into comics.
Well, it was a combination of Super Friends cartoon and Charlie Brown. A Charlie Brown book that I read that got me into collecting comics. So, yeah.
But that'd be cool. We're gonna have a Legion of Doom versus the Justice League inside of Superman.
Yeah, again, how the heck could he have gotten in there? I mean, did he fly up his poop chute while he was going to the bathroom?
He's Luther.
I mean, does
Superman... He'll monologue soon enough.
I mean, does Superman even produce waste? I don't think that's ever been addressed in canon.
I don't think it needs to be.
Yeah, you're probably right, but...
How he shaves has been addressed, at least.
All right, well, that's true. That's true. Let's go. Let's get back to something that's actually relevant to the story here. Who do we think this baby is? Anybody have any guesses?
I am not familiar enough with Flash's villains. I am not sure.
He says, I couldn't have done it without the help of a true evil genius who's right over here. So a true evil genius, the green blanket and green eyes have to mean something.
There was a – is it Brainiac?
Is it Eobard Thawne?
I'm thinking it's a clone of Luthor himself.
Oh.
Yeah, that'd be really, that'd be such a Luther thing to do also.
Right.
I agree. It's me, you idiots.
That's my guess. I'm going on record with an official guess of it's a clone of Luther himself.
What if it's another Jor-El twist?
Is that your guess?
No, that's not my official guess. That's just, I'm throwing it out there.
All right. Well, I'm on, you can mark me down for baby Luther. You know, there was another baby, evil baby.
That's what I was going to say. The baby Darkseid.
Darkseid. Yeah.
It's got to relate somehow.
But then again, Darkseid's going to be an odyssey already.
Yeah, I was going to say
in
that.
A few issues. So
that is no, but this interesting they have another baby villain, possibly.
Plus, when you saw baby Darkseid in Metal, he looked like a baby Darkseid. This baby looks human.
My only problem with the whole Luther thing is that Luther has blue eyes.
That's true.
And they make it really clear that he has blue eyes here, and then the baby really, really specific about his green eyes. So,
well, maybe the baby's like irradiated or it has kryptonite infused in him.
Kryptonite?
So that's why his eyes are green. I don't know. I'm still sticking with my clone of Luthor guess.
So like it's like Manta just gonna stand there the entire time? Like, what's his?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine at some point we'll get a Manta Aquaman fight going on. But I was gonna mention that too. It's like for being a Legion of Doom, there's only like what, six members, and you know, I don't really count Joker as a very good member because he can't. I mean, for all his machinations and everybody thinking he's such a great, you know, quote unquote great villain because he's always putting Batman to the test. I mean, ultimately, he's not really that powerful.
No, but neither is Batman, I feel. Like, that's the key to Joker, is he's Batman's greatest enemy. So if you're trying to pair up every hero with a villain, then he's like, if you want to defeat Batman, you got to have him on the team.
I don't know. I feel like if you're going to be a Legion of Doom, you need to be a heavy hitter. I mean, Joker wasn't even in the Super Friends Legion of Doom.
But who was from the Batman team then? What, Solomon Grundy? He's strong, but he's an idiot.
He's not really a Batman villain. They had
Batman to beat him every time.
They had the Riddler. I feel like the Riddler.
But he's smart, but he also gets the shit beaten out of him. I think Joker's not as smart as the Riddler, but he's more formidable.
Like I love the Riddler, but he's self-defeating. That'd be the worst person to have on a villain's team.
Yeah, because Lex Luthor's already the brains, so why would you want the Riddler?
I didn't say I wanted the Riddler. You asked me.
No, I'm just saying that that's why that team almost makes less sense than having the Joker.
I say take the Joker off. I mean, I think they would have been better off with Vandal Savage. How about somebody like really powerful like Doomsday or Black Adam?
But the key is they're matching heroes to villains. You have to have a Batman.
How are you going to control Doomsday? That guy can give a damn about being on anyone's team. He's just going to wreck everything.
All right, so you're saying what Batman villain would I put on here?
Yeah, because they're obviously matching heroes to villains. So what Batman Bane? Villain would be worthy of the Bane? Legion of Doom?
You mean like Ra's al Ghul?
That's a pretty good choice.
He's not a team player at all, though. I think Bane would be more likely.
That's what I was thinking. Oh, yeah,
Bane's a good one. I would almost put I like the idea of having Mr. Freeze on the team, too.
Oh, that's a good choice.
He'd be way more powerful.
Because that's the thing, you know, we're trying to think of a good Batman villain, but really Batman villains aren't really like world-conquering villains. But I feel like if it's like, going to be like the Legion of Doom, it needs to be like the most powerful, you know?
I know, but like ideally from a storyteller's perspective, you need to have a villain for each of the heroes.
But they don't.
But they're working towards that. You can tell this is also feeding into the movie that they're going to do. And they're going to, like, use Cheetah and, like, yeah. It's.
I promise you that Scott Snyder doesn't give a flying F about what they're going to do in the movie.
I don't know. There are more powerful
Jesse
forces.
Jesse Eisenberg can be this Luther.
Yeah, this is not Marvel. This is not Marvel. DC Comics don't have anything to do with the movies, as they should. Or shouldn't, however you want to say it. Snyder's just going to tell the story that he wants to tell. So yeah, I mean, to your point, if you do think they're matching up, so we've got Garrod for Flash,
yep.
We've got Cheetah for Wonder Woman, we've got Black Manta for Aquaman, we've got Luther for Superman, we've got
Sinestro
for who? Martian Manhunter?
For Green Lantern.
There's no Green Lantern on the team.
But that he's already met up with the Green Lantern that would be on the team.
You mean the Ultraviolet Lantern?
No, yeah, exactly. After he becomes an Ultraviolet Lantern, he attacks Jon Stewart, who Batman wants to be their Lantern on the team.
That's true, I suppose. So I imagine
Stewart. Martian Manhunter is, I think, the only one without a villain.
What about Hawkgirl?
Well, I forgot she was on the team until I reread this issue. So, to be fair, she's an exception. Every major Justice League character that everyone would recognize, someone who's never read a comic or someone seen a movie, they have the evil version of them.
I mean, Kite Man. It is kind of interesting because really when you think about it, there really should be a Green Lantern on the team. And
Cyborg, I think once they free what's-his-face, he'll be on the team.
Jon Stewart? Well, And as much as I kind of felt weird about Cyborg being on the team with being a founding member of the team, taking Martian Manhunter's spot, actually, when the new 52 started, I've kind of gotten used to the idea of him being a critical member of the team, and he doesn't show up here either. Now I know he's going to be on Justice League Odyssey, Starfire, and what have you. Yeah. And the other thing is, Wonder Woman leads Justice League Dark. So is she going to be the one member that's on multiple teams?
Yeah, I think she'll be on multiple teams. Since Cyborg's such a more recent addition, I think she'll just transition over to Odyssey. Because I was talking about this at work with someone. I can't think of a Cyborg villain the same way I can think of Aquaman's villain is
Cyborg doesn't
Black have Manta
any.
And
Cyborg doesn't have any villains. They were trying in the most recent Cyborg series to create a couple of rogues for him, but the series
didn't figured
sell that well.
I don't think Wonder Woman is going to be doing that much in Dark. I mean, what real mystical powers does she have to really match up with
her powers are all based on magic, apparently. At least,
and they played it up a lot, and
yeah,
no justice.
I know, but compared to the other members of the team, not.
Well, I don't think she's going to be casting spells or anything, but I think that DC is trying to lean into her. The fact that she is linked to the mystical side of the universe. And maybe you think of her as the liaison in between, and maybe Cyborg will be too. I know when I talked to both James, actually when I talked to all three writers, I talked to Williamson, Snyder, and Tynan, they all mentioned that how interconnected the three books are going to be going forward, and how you'll see characters from the other Justice Leagues come in and out of each other's books. So as much as they are three separate teams, I think you're going to see crossover sometimes based on storyline. And hey, do you mind if I use, Jon Stewart for, a couple issues over here? Hey, do you mind if, we take Wonder Woman over here and do this? Hey, how about Flash over here with Odyssey for a while? So I could easily see it being kind of fluid, and I like that idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I love it.
The one thing that I'll say, and maybe it's just because I love the new costume designs I've seen so much, is that I really would love to see some Supergirl action at some point in the league. I know she's going to be out there trying to track down Rogol Zar or whatever after Bendis's Man of Steel ends and when Supergirl comes back in August. But I would love at some point to see her on the team. I think that she'd be a good addition. I think she's really been underused for quite a few years in the DCU. But yeah, as far as a villain for Martian Manhunter, did we decide who that was?
No, I don't know any of his villains either.
He doesn't really have any villains. So
isn't there a white Martian that he always goes up against?
No, I'm not sure where we're at with the white Martian. That was just a different species of Martian on his planet. I don't think he really has a
Martian the Manhunter. I mean, Marvin the Martian.
Marvin the Martian. Well, they've been doing plenty of Looney Tunes crossovers lately. Yeah, so
that's why I thought of it.
They need somebody to go up against, to match up against. I mean, if that's what they're trying to do, they need somebody to match up against Martian Manhunter, and they need somebody to match up against.
Well, Hawkman. They just need a psychic person. So far, he's kind of been a hands off, guiding the team, but not using his powers unless he has to, kind of character.
I'm trying to think of what fire villains there are because that's his weakness.
I don't know. I know all the Marvel fire villains. I don't know any of the
DC. What about Megat? What's the name? The demon? I can't think of his name right now.
The demon? Like the character of the demon?
No, I think his book is called The Demon. He has a weird name.
Etrigan?
Etrigan, yeah.
Yeah, that's
he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He could be a bad guy. He's a demon. Why not?
Yeah, but Jason Blood's a cool dude.
Yeah.
He's more of an anti-hero. I mean, Jason Blood's kind of the hero, and Etrigan's kind of just selfish and out for himself. I don't know. He's really a villain. I don't see him as a member of the Legion of Doom. How about Firefly? We saw him.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, that's also like, that's not a worthy member of the Legion of Doom. Firefly can light a few fires.
That's definitely sea level.
Yeah.
For sure.
Nolan wouldn't even touch Firefly. Why would Lex Luthor?
Yeah, so we still need to we'll have to talk about it next time, who we think they need to match up for Hawk Girl. Which, I mean, Hawk Girl, honestly, I think Shadow Thief, that's a classic Hawkman and Hawk Girl villain who's a little bit underrated, pretty powerful. Oh, and, of course, you can never go wrong with Gentleman Ghost, just because he's the coolest looking villain in the entire DC universe.
I was thinking of the same thing, and that you're going to sound crazy bringing him up. The last time I saw Gentleman Ghost, he was on the back of a train, and I never saw him again.
I think it was the back of a truck, actually.
It was a truck, yeah. We never saw him again.
Oh, that was so disappointing. And you know what? I've seen Scott about 3 or 4 times since then, and I never remember to ask him about that. I'm going to have to try to remember. Remind me when we're in San Diego to ask him, dude, what was up with No Gentleman Ghost? It's like such a great villain. And he would definitely bring some class, you know, based on his nice monocle and top hat and cane he'd really class up the joint when it comes to the Legion of Doom. Yeah, we definitely need some Gentleman Ghost on the Legion of Doom. So we got Hawk Girls. So we still need to figure out who we'd bring on for Martian Manhunter. It needs to be somewhat of a heavy hitter. So we'll think on that and we'll get back to you. All right. Anything else you want to say about Justice League number 2?
Nah, I'm good.
I think we've said it all.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I think we're going to need to give it another couple issues to see if that's what Snyder's doing, you know, if he's playing to the strength of his artist. And then issue 5 is actually written by Tynan and is also a Legion of Doom focused issue. So kind of like this one is, I suppose. But we don't have that long to wait until we get the issue 3. It comes out next week. So only a week from today.
Yay.
On the 4th of July. Hope we're all ready for some fireworks.
You guys gonna? They're gonna do a midnight release for the Batman wedding issue in Fresno. I'm gonna head down to it and see if they actually get married, because I'm still not convinced.
The more I think about it, the more I think it's the batrimony is gonna be called off. It's not gonna take place. That being said,
Batman's going to be left with a frozen heart, which is why he's going to go up against Mr. Freeze.
I wasn't planning on going to a midnight release, but a friend of the show, Mitch Gerrits, is going to be at one of the local shops here. I mean, I say local. It's actually almost 45 minutes away from me because it's down in Tempe. But it's actually one of my favorite shops. I wish it wasn't so far away. I'd go a lot more often. It's called Ash Avenue Comics. So he's going to be there hanging out. So I'll probably go down there and hang out with him for a little while and pick up 50 at the midnight release. And Nick's allergic to comic shops. He doesn't go into comic shops because he's afraid he'll spend too much money.
What?
You saw me at Comic-Con. I spend all the money.
You did.
All the money.
Yeah, so he actually has – Nick has people. Nick has people that he sends out to pick up the books for him so that he won't go in and spend money that he doesn't have.
Friend, who I tell him what books to add and what books to remove each month.
So, yeah.
So, like, how much is he going to spend in August then? Because August.
if your listeners checked out our recent Future Picks episode, man, August, crazy. So I did my DCBS order and it's over $200. I got a trim. I don't know what I'm going to do, what I'm going to cut
You're
out.
You're not going to end up trimming anything.
No.
Especially after whatever they talk about in July at the show, you're going to be like, oh my God, this book and this book. And well, then you're going to add to it. You're going to add to it.
Well, I won't add to my DCBS. There's every possibility that even though I ordered from DCBS, I'll still go to the comic shop on Wednesday like I do every Wednesday. And buy more things that I decided, you know, at the last minute that, but my DCBS order has to be in by this Friday. Cause you know, you order June for August. So then once it's in, I can't edit it. But of course I could always go down to the comic shop on Wednesday when the books come out and pick up more stuff, which is usually what I end up doing. A lot of times it's variant covers. Cause that's one thing that bugs me. Like, you know, I don't know which cover I want. All the cover images haven't all been released. Granted, it's probably because the artists haven't actually finished them yet. But still, it makes it kind of annoying. Like, I don't know which cover I want. I don't always want to buy every cover. Bad enough.
Get all the Fantastic Four ones. All of them.
I did not get all the Fantastic Four ones. I got too many as it is, and that may be where I'll do some trimming. But yeah, I got probably like six or seven of them. And not only did I get the six or seven of, you know, books that I don't even read, Marvel books that I don't even read just because they have a Fantastic Four cover. But then I got like eight different covers for Fantastic Four number one. Like Art Germ has one for each member. And then I got the Sarah Pacelli one. And then there's the Mark Brooks one. So it's like, I don't need eight covers of Fantastic Four number one.
Drinking the Kool-Aid, man. That's what Marvel wants. They don't want you to read the book. They just want you to buy the covers.
I understand that. But see, here's what's cool about something else that I ordered that's coming out in August from DC. They have a Action Comics 1000 hardcover that has everything that was in Action Comics 1000 plus the Paul Levitz, Neil Adams digital-only Action Comics 1000 story. Plus, it has a reprint of Action Comics 1 and Action Comics 2. Plus, I was vacillating, like I wasn't sure I was going to order it. I was trying to decide. The thing that put me over the top, the other thing that's in this hardcover, it has every cover of Action Comics 1000, all the variants, including all the retailer variants. And there were some of those retailer variants I really thought about ordering, but some of them were like $25. And again, it's like, I already have the book. I already bought all the through the decade variants that were already $8 each. And now I'm going to pay $25 because I want the Nicola Scott variant all the way from Australia. I really wanted it, but I just couldn't justify, you know, spending that much money, especially all the extra shipping. But now with this Action Comics 1000 hardcover, all the retailer variants are going to be included in that. So I'm really excited to get my hands on that. If I knew for sure Marvel was doing something like that, I wouldn't get any of the variants. I'd be like, all right, I'll just get the Fantastic Four number one hardcover later when it has all the variants. But knowing Marvel, they won't do that.
Our local, well, the quote-unquote local shop in Fresno, Legends, they had their Action 1000 variant done by Neil Adams. So I picked that up. It's a pretty cool cover.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in Neil Adams one. It was pretty cool, so... Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast. As always, we want to thank you all for joining us. You can do us a big favor and go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. Just basically raises up the visibility of the podcast when people do a search for comic book podcast. We can also be found on Stitcher if you're more of an Android guy rather than an Apple guy. And of course, any podcast application you have, you can just do a search for the Comic Source and we'll always come up that way. So be sure and tell all your friends about us, all the people down at your local comic shop, your comic shop itself. Numbers have been growing. This month, June, we actually set a record, which we broke the previous record, which was just set last month. So numbers have increased every month this year. It's really crazy. So we can't thank you guys enough for tuning in and listening. It's nice to know that we're not just broadcasting out into the ether. There are actually comic book fans out there that are listening. We're so grateful. And one way we like to give you guys thanks and give something back is when we're at shows. We have these really cool comic source lanyards that we'd love to hook you up with. So if you're going to be at Amazing Las Vegas this weekend, I'll be there on the 29th, the day this episode comes out, as well as Saturday the 30th. So hit me up on social media. Let me know. I'd love to meet up with you, take a picture, and hook you up with a lanyard. So twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. You can do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow along with that convention coverage, including coverage of San Diego Comic-Con. Manny and I will be there in a few short weeks. Tons of content going to come out of that. A lot of announcements, panel coverage, interviews, all that kind of good stuff. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. You can also find past episodes on iTunes and Stitcher. If you do go to lrmonline.com for any past episodes, be sure while you're there to check out all the other coverage on pop culture, movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Yeah. Bye.